Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Just giving the people what they want. Nothing but dad vibes today. Stacy Ross is gone. She's on vacation doing what she does. Maybe getting her nails done. Maybe chilling with Brian. I don't know what she's doing, but I do know one thing. I got Curtis Rogers
with
me today.
What's up, Bump? How we doing today?
I'm good, man. How you doing today?
Doing well. Doing well. Yeah, Stacy, she's on a much-needed extended weekend.
Yeah.
She works harder than anybody that you or I know. So shout-out to her for taking some extra time off. But we're going to hold it down until 2 p.m. today, and we've got a lot in store.
We got a lot to do, man. We got Bill Rabinowitz of the Columbus Dispatch. He's going to talk to us about that Buckeyes Pro Day the other day. We got Shannon Dreher joining us. Also, Dave Wyman. He's down in Arizona. He's going to shed some light on what's going on in the desert. We got Brady Bones on the ones and twos back there. Dad vibes, man. And it feels good. It feels good. But we're going to start talking about the Seattle Mariners. Last year, they make it to the playoffs. They end the drought. Everyone's excited. The vibes are good. But we're not satisfied, Curtis. We want to get back to the playoffs, and I think we're going to have to depend on some young players and some development.
I think so, because last year, the development of their four best young players, Julio, Cal, Logan, and George Kirby, were instrumental in getting this team back to the postseason. I will put myself out there and say, without those four guys, the Mariners do not make the playoffs
right.
A year ago. They were the most important thing to the 2022 season. And I think that's going to be the case again in 2023, that those guys continue their upward trajectories, that those guys continue the positive steps forward that they made in 2022. And we saw it again last night. George Kirby looking dominant in spring training. Yes, it's spring training, but going five no-hit innings and striking out nine.
Here's the lineup and the 1-2 and a swing and a foul ball caught by Cal Raleigh. Off his mask, right into his glove. Cal makes the catch. That is strike three. Holy smokes, what a night for George Kirby.
Flat out dominant last night. And I think that's kind of the expectation a lot of us have for Kirby in year two, is that he's going to be one of the best starters in this Mariners rotation. He may end up being the best, I think, at the end of the day, because I think Luis Castillo is great. You already know what you're going to get from him, but we don't know what George Kirby can ultimately be as a starting pitcher.
If George Kirby ends up being our best pitcher, we're definitely going to the playoffs. We're definitely going to win a series. You mentioned Robbie Ray. You still got Castillo. You got Marco on the back end. You got guys coming out the bullpen. The strength of this team the last couple of years has been the pitching rotation, and I would love to see it. I know it's only spring training. For weeks, they've been telling us to simmer down. Don't get excited. But when you see your boy strike out 9-5, allowing zero runs, man, you have to be excited.
Yeah, zero runs, zero hits, too. I mean, he was just flat-out dominant last night. I don't think you need to see anything more from George Kirby in spring. I think he is ready to go for the start of the season. He is, if he can develop more and add on to what he did a year ago, we're talking about one of the best starting pitchers in the American League. In my mind, he was the best rookie starting pitcher in the American League
right.
A year ago. And that, you know, there wasn't a ton to pick from last year, but that's not a knock on Kirby at all. He was fantastic from the month of May onward. And one thing we kind of pointed out in our show prep today, Bump, was that you look at the four great young players that the Mariners have at the major league level right now. How many of them contributed in the month of April a year ago? It was one.
Yeah.
It was Logan Gilbert. That's
it.
And Logan Gilbert was the American League Pitcher of the Month in the month of April, which was fantastic. But Kirby didn't make his debut until Mother's Day. We remember that day fondly because that he pitched it at a sold-out T-Mobile Park. It was a walk-off that day. You had Cal Raleigh was toiling in AAA. He was going back and forth between Seattle and Tacoma the first month of the season. And then we all know Julio in the month of April just was, you know, testing out the waters, basically.
Umps was messing with him. Those were messing
exactly,
with Julio.
Exactly. Now, you're not only going to get a full year's worth of production out of Julio, hopefully. I think we can all kind of expect him to be what he was at the end of the season. But you're going to get a full year's worth of Cal Raleigh, a full year's worth of George Kirby. Like, you're missing a month of production from three of those four guys a year ago, and they still made the playoffs. Now, you're going to get a full year's worth of it, Lord willing, in 2023. I think that makes the Mariners a better team this year, right? Like, just math would tell you that.
Math would tell you that. Life experience would tell you that. You go through something a couple of times, you get familiar, you understand how to make it through a season, you understand how to start. I think that was the biggest part I get from listening to you talk is just, look, these guys got to come out hot. You didn't have Cal. You mentioned Julio Rodriguez and his struggles. If these guys come out and perform like the professionals that they are today, right, the professionals they were last year around this time, doesn't even eclipse who they are right now. You got Julio, who's a bona fide star. You got Cal Raleigh, who was showing way more personality than I've ever seen out of him. If you guys didn't watch that clip of them going to In-N-Out in the little golf cart, this is the most personality I've seen out of Cal Raleigh. He's established now.
Yes.
And that has to do something to his mental, his approach to the game. He knows that he's the guy.
You look at the comfortability of a lot of these guys. We heard, what was it, Greg Amsinger of MLB Network say this is the best vibe of any camp he's been to in spring training. You've heard Jerry DePoto say this is the most enjoyable camp. It's amazing what a playoff run will do to an organization, will do to the confidence of everybody in the organization. I remember when J.P. Crawford first got to Seattle. This was a guy that, in his introductory press conference, he was at the Mariners media luncheon, what was at 2017, 2018, something like that. And that was somebody that did not want to be behind a microphone at all. I remember seeing him, how nervous he was with the lights shining down on the stage at the press conference table at T-Mobile Park. And that was somebody that was like, I don't know if he's, you know, if he's cut out for, right, for talking to the media. But now we're going to get to it in the timeline. He's sharing alien conspiracy theories in the middle of a game last night during spring training. That's a guy who's become more comfortable. Cal Raleigh's starting to see more personality out of him. You know, Logan Gilbert has his alter ego of Walter. Like, these are things that don't happen when a team is struggling to find victories. These are things that happen when a winning culture is being established. And look, back-to-back 90-win seasons, back-to-back winning seasons, by the way, for the first time since 2002-2003, like, that's important to make note of from a year ago. To go back-to-back-to-back, man, I don't know if the Mariners have done back-to-back. They went four straight from 2000 to 2003, but it's been a long time since we've seen back-to-back-to-back winning seasons around here. But I think it's very fair to assume they're going to do that. And, I mean, you got to be very hopeful of them getting back to the postseason. Do I think they're going to overtake Houston this year? I don't think so, but that's not to say that they're not going to have a good season.
Yeah, man. It's are you guys ready for this? Because this team has an opportunity to really change the identity of this ball club. I think they have already last year. We're going to the playoffs, winning the series. But if they could run it back again, a winning season, that would be awesome. So we talked about these young guys and how they're going to have a full year. Someone also mentioned on the text lines a full year of Luis Castillo as well. We didn't see that.
Yeah.
And then you start adding these veterans. Teo Hernandez, I want to see what he does. Right, he brings a dynamic to this team that wasn't here before. We got a chance to speak with him, month or so ago, and the calm, confidence, demeanor of this guy, I feel like it's going to rub off on these rising stars like Cal and Julio Rodriguez. You always need an OG on the team to kind of mentor these dudes. Last year was Carlos Santana a little bit, yeah, brought in the dancing or whatnot. So now Teo, what do you expect from Teo? What does he bring to this ball club?
He brings a professionalism, a guy who has had a lot of success in recent years at the big league level, a guy that has tremendous power, somebody that's going to make loud contact, not somebody like Jesse Winker, where last year making loud contact was not his game. It was not something that he was, privy to. Teoscar Hernandez is not going to be cheated on any ball that gets, tries to sneak by him. He's right. Going to punish opposing pitchers. And also, like, comparing his personality to Jesse Winker's, I feel like Teoscar Hernandez, having been to the postseason prior with Toronto, having had experience with the Astros organization too, I mean, this guy has been around winning ball clubs his entire career, whereas Winker, coming from Cincinnati, was probably, you know, he was the guy on some bad teams. Mm-hmm. I don't think the pressure cooker environment of a playoff chase last year helped out his struggles. We don't have to worry about that this year because Winker's not with the Mariners anymore. He's with Milwaukee. So I think we're getting a guy in Teoscar Hernandez who's been down this road before, who knows what it's like to play in big ball games, who knows what it's like to play in intense environments. And because of that, I think the Mariners are going to benefit greatly from having him in their lineup.
Here's what I think about. When I think of Teoscar Hernandez, I think of Colton Wong, and then I think of Jesse Winker. Jesse had a bad year here. I think we heard someone say that he thinks he's going to bounce back over there. He's with Milwaukee right now, I believe.
He is.
And I think of just the personalities of those three, and I look at Teoscar Hernandez, and I think of Colton Wong, who we've spoken to both of them. They fit the personality of this ball club. No knock on Jesse Winker. Doesn't mean he's a horrible person or nobody likes him. Just his vibe didn't fit the vibe of this ball club. So that alone to me, because once you put athletes in certain situations where they can be themselves and they're connecting with their teammates, you're going to get some good baseball or just some good play out of them eventually.
You are. You definitely are. And clubhouse environment is so important in baseball because it's the longest regular season. Mm-hmm. It's 162 games in the regular season, plus in spring, it's, what, 30 more games. And if you go to the postseason, the Mariners played, what was it, 5 postseason games. So you're around mm-hmm. each other for, you know, 200-plus days right. out of your year. If you don't like your coworkers, that's going to be really tough to show up to work for that many days out of the year. And you've brought in guys that I think are going to gel very nicely with this clubhouse. Colton Wong has, you know, one of the, you know, he's from the islands. Yep. He's very laid back, chill, very agreeable. Like he's a good dude to have in your clubhouse. And then, you know, we met Teoscar Hernandez too in person, and like that guy just kind of glides wherever he goes.
Right,
he's
right.
Like do his feet touch the ground?
He floats. You know, there's one name we haven't mentioned. I think we've touched on everybody. Ty France, man. He puts a full year together of being healthy for the most part. Of course, you're going to get banged up, nicks and bruises. It's a long season. But you get a full year of the Ty France we saw in that first half of last year. Again, a guy who can help push this team forward and reach places we haven't been in a long time.
He's healthy right now, and that's going to be the biggest thing for him this upcoming season, is to stay healthy, which he has not yet done at the big league level. He has not yet put together a full 162 games where he's remained healthy. But we know what he can be when he's at full health, and that was what he was prior to the All-Star game last year, hitting above 300 and really just being a force in this lineup. At the beginning part of the season last year, in April and May, he was really the only bat going.
Right.
He was really the only bat that was producing, and if he hadn't been doing that, who knows how big of a hole the Mariners would have been in, you know, outside of the 29 and 39 start. Maybe they're 15 games below 500, 16 games below 500. The fact that he was doing what he was doing kept the Mariners at least alive when it looked like all hope was lost.
He held it down for us. Appreciate you, Ty. You're going to put a good long year together. Hey, guys, celebrate Mariners opening day by joining us live outside of left field gates at T-Mobile Park. We're going to start with the Bump and Station show from 10 to 2. You know how we do it. And then Wyman and Bob will take you all the way up to the pregame show at 6 p.m. Let's get to these headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Pete Carroll and John Schneider are off to Tuscaloosa to attend Alabama's Pro Day. What's the real headline?
Pete and John headed to Alabama to visit the NFL's 33rd team. Man, prospects like everywhere. That. You walk in, I would imagine, I've never been to Tuscaloosa and been to their facility, but I would imagine you walk in on that pro day, they're standing room only, shoulder to shoulder. We have the Panthers send, what, 11 or 12 representatives to watch CJ throw the football. I would assume they're going to send a bunch here. This is Alabama. It's Alabama and Georgia at this point to where we got the 33rd and the 34th team. You want to go see some future NFL prospects, you go visit those universities.
Yeah, Alabama's got some guys that I think the Seahawks could not only have interest in at number five. I don't know if Will Anderson's going to follow them at number five, but if he does, I bet the Seahawks are running that card up to the podium and saying, we want this guy on our team because he seems like the best defensive prospect in this draft. He comes at a position of need for the Seahawks. I don't know if he falls past three at Arizona, but if he does, the Seahawks better be ready to turn that card in. But there are other guys out there, and we're going to talk about them at 10:45. It's not just one guy that the Seahawks have their eye on at Alabama. There could be three, four, maybe five guys that they have huge interest in come draft night.
Yeah, that's what happens with Bama. I wonder, you see a world where Nick Saban walks away from Alabama. Is Alabama the last stop for Nick Saban, you think?
I think so. I think he's approaching 70 years old. He signed a contract extension a couple years ago that I think would take him to about age 75, 76, what have you. I don't know who the next guy would be at Alabama. I mean, Kirby Smart's got a good thing going at Georgia. He's a Georgia alum. He coached under Nick Saban, though, at Alabama. Maybe he goes there. Dabo Swinney is an Alabama grad.
Right.
Maybe he takes the Alabama job after Nick Saban. I don't know. It will be weird to think of Alabama football without Saban patrolling the sidelines in the future, but I don't know why he'd walk away right now. I mean, they're always in the national title conversation.
He's living good. Living good.
Headline rewrites.
Number 3 Gonzaga takes on number 2 UCLA in the Sweet 16 tonight at 6:30 p.m. What's the real headline?
If it's anything like the other times they've met in the tournament, it's going to be ending with tears from someone.
Boy, these two teams, whenever they meet, they give you an instant classic. Let's go in the Wayback Machine, Bump, to 2021. Here's Jalen Suggs hitting the half-court game winner in the Final Four.
Trezang, again with the ball in his hands, in the paint, floater, short, got it back, ties it with 3. Gonzaga has time to do something. Suggs for the win. Oh, yes! Oh, yes! Unbelievable! Season remains on go.
Are you?
Oh my God!
There he is.
Now, if we want to go even further back, how about 17 years to the day? UCLA and Gonzaga. Number 2 UCLA taking on number 3 Gonzaga. Brent Stecker, editor of SeattleSports.com. Plug your ears because this is what happened 17 years ago.
We don't want to foul Morrison. You make him get it over half court. You know you got to foul.
And a steal. Inside, the freshman up, and they go in front. Radio, last chance to dance.
Unbelievable.
Oh, what a game.
Unbelievable.
What a game. UCLA. Unbelievable. Are you kidding me? After being down by 17, Heartbreak City.
Gus Johnson on the call.
Heartbreak City, Heartbreak Hotel, whatever you want to call it. It always hurts to see a Laker great cry like that, Adam Morrison,
two-time champ.
You know, it always hurts, man. I remember, I'll never forget that image, man. Like, you got that shaggy hair, you got that shady mustache, he's covering his face. Man, I felt so bad for Morrison in that moment.
It's cool to see him laugh about it now because he's in that AT&T commercial that's been playing all tournament long where he's being helped up, I think, by Greg Oden off the sand there or whatever. He's in full Gonzaga uniform. Shout out to Adam Morrison.
Hey, he's making money off of that now, so he can smile about it. It's all good.
Headline rewrites.
The Kraken have a shot at putting some much-needed distance between themselves and Nashville on Thursday night. What's the real headline?
The Kraken are looking to turn the Predators into prey. Bars.
Let's do it.
Bars. Let's go.
Bars.
The Kraken, when they beat the Dallas Stars recently, you needed that because we saw them, it seems like, 3 times in the last week or so. And they are a good hockey team. And now it's time to get some distance in between you and everybody else. And it starts with Nashville, man. You got to go over there, take care of business. And Let's hope they get it done, man. What do they need to do, Curtis?
They need to just get 2 points every single night. Get 2 points. That should be the goal, and especially against a Nashville team that's breathing down Seattle's neck for one of those final wild card spots. Joey DeCord getting the start and goal tonight for the Kraken. Second straight game he started. Philip Grubauer not available, still dealing with that illness that took him out of, what, Saturday's game early. I'll be interested to see if DeCord gets more playing time here, because Martin Jones hasn't really been the answer in goal this year. Philip Grubauer hasn't really been the answer in goal this year. Maybe you take a flyer on DeCord, who spent most of his time down with Coachella Valley this season. Maybe that's the answer right now. You just got to go with the hot end. It's like running back in the NFL. Whoever's right. getting you yardage, whoever's toting the rock the best, that's who you go with as your starter.
That's what I appreciate about hockey too, man. It's like nobody's safe. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. If you are giving it up in the goal, they will switch you out real quick. But I also would love just to have a guy we know we can count on. A Cal Raleigh behind the plate. Yes. You know what I'm saying? If you need a break, Mr. you send him for a game or two. But for some reason, they just haven't been able to do that. With all that being said, they are still in the playoff hunt. They're still a wild card right now. So they've done enough to weather the storm. But at some point, we got to see another consistent run. I would enjoy 6 wins in a row again. How about one of those?
Especially this time of year.
Right.
Locking up a playoff spot. They've got, what, 12 games to go, I think?
Something like that.
Before the postseason? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lock it up, Kraken. Let's go.
Lock it up, Kraken. We need you. Could you imagine Seahawks go to the playoffs? The Mariners go to the playoffs. The Kraken go to the playoffs, man.
I don't know if we've ever, like when the Sonics were in existence, I don't know if the Sonics, Mariners, and Seahawks ever made the playoffs simultaneously. This last year was the first time the Mariners and Seahawks ever made the playoffs simultaneously. So, no, we've never seen three teams of this caliber. I mean, no disrespect to the Storm or Sounders, but, like, this having all three teams like this, you had three rookies make their collective All-Star games, Julio, Tarik, Matty Beniers, and then all three teams make the playoffs with these guys?
Come on now. Spoil us! Like I do my kids. Spoilers. Like, all right. Hey, we know how the NFL works, right? Players come and go, and some even return later in their careers. We're going to take a look at some recently departed Seahawks and break down what went right, what went wrong, and how they can succeed with their new organizations. That's coming up next. It's the Bump and Stacey Show. We got Curtis Rogers filling in.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Curtis Rogers filling in for Stacey. Today I'm Michael Bumpus. It's Dad Vibes. We got fanny packs on. We got flip-flops on.
We do. We've got snacks in the cupboard.
Snacks, whatever you need. Yeah. We got it. Stacey prepared as well for this, all right?
Cable on.
Cable's on. Dad pod today, guys. Thanks for joining us. When we left, we kind of alluded to what we're going to talk about. There are some Seahawks that have left us. And there are a lot of times where several instances where
they're still living, though.
They're still living, yeah. But they're on different teams. Sorry. let me clear that up. They're on
a
different team.
Dearly departed.
They got
Rashad
released
Penny,
and they got signed. Barton, LJ, and Penny are the guys that we're going to talk about. In some cases, we see guys come back. We saw Jefferson come back, Maxwell come back, Bruce Irvin has come back. So we're not going to shut the door on these guys.
Jaron Reed
is back now. Not going to shut the door, but we're saying, okay, these guys are with different organizations. What went wrong here? That's the first part of this conversation that we're going to attack. What went wrong here? Let's start with Cody Barton. And Curtis, I look at Cody. He's going to be the starter over there with the Washington Commanders at that middle linebacker spot. I remember when he was a rookie, the thing that elevated him was that he knew all the positions. That's when they were playing the 4-3. He knew the mic position and the Will and the Sam. And you could move him around. That makes him reliable, makes him dependable. That's why he got his opportunity. As the years went by, we saw him look a bit confused at times of what he was looking at. Maybe he's just taking the bait too much. And we saw some missed tackles. I always try to tell people, Cody played better towards the end of the season, but once you put something out there to the public, that's all they see you as. They don't see some improvement. So that's what I saw that went wrong with Cody. He just seemed confused at times and missed a couple tackles, and you combine that with the mistakes in prior years, people just started to give up on my man.
He had the unenviable task of following the greatest linebacker in Seahawks franchise history, right. Which obviously his production is not going to match what Bobby's was. No one will ever be able to match what Bobby Wagner did in a Seahawks uniform from the linebacker spot. But I think Cody Barton became an easy target for the Seahawks' defensive struggles because the middle linebacker is viewed as the captain or viewed as, you know, the guy on the defensive side of the ball that's kind of in charge of everything else. But Jordan Brooks was the one wearing the headset last year. He was also part of that. But it wasn't just Cody Barton on the defensive side of the ball that had his share of struggles last year. It was the defensive line. It was the secondary at times. Like, it wasn't just Cody Barton that wasn't playing up to expectations here in Seattle, but like the Seahawks defense hasn't played up to expectations in quite a while.
It's been
about 4 or 5 years since they've had even a league average defense. So I look at Cody Barton, and maybe a change of scenery is going to be beneficial for him.
Yeah, maybe. You never know, man. You go to a new spot, you get rejuvenated, they believe in you, they give you opportunities. Let's go down to L.J. Collier, man, the first-round pick. I heard Brady Henderson talk about the L.J. situation, and he said pretty much the reason why the Hawks drafted him so early is because they were forced to. They felt that, I forgot who exactly it was, a guy they wanted was off the board, and they felt like they wouldn't be able to get this caliber of player later on in the draft, so you draft LJ. He's banged up earlier. I believe it was his wrist, I think, that that held him from playing. But he never really made any noise. One big play he made against the Patriots when he stopped Cam Newton on the goal line.
Him and Marquise Blair.
Him and Marquise Blair, who are with different organizations now. What I saw with LJ was just, no dominance, right? You have to be dominant on that defensive line. And he would flash. Every now and then he'd get a sack, he'd make a play, but it was about consistency. We look at that defensive line the past few years, that's something that we've been missing. So when he was let go, it was no surprise. But now my man is with the Arizona Cardinals. They're hoping they can tap into something over there. When you look at LJ and his time here, what did you see that was right? What did you see that was wrong?
Well, I didn't see him on the field much. That was one thing that I saw was wrong. He appeared in 8 games this last season. He appeared in 10 in 2021. The only full season he appeared in was 2020, and he had 3 sacks. That was the only season also where he registered a sack. He did not register a sack his rookie season, year 3 or year 4. And then, like you mentioned, the injury that he sustained his rookie season, keeping him out for a little bit there, he appeared in 11 games. So what I didn't see from him was him on the field. It was just such an incomplete time for him here in Seattle. And I wonder what that 2019 draft looks like if they're able to, you know, take somebody else besides LJ Collier in that spot in the first round. And I get why they went for LJ Collier when they did, because there was a run on defensive end, run on pass rushers at the end of the first round. And the Seahawks were kind of like, well, if we're not going to be able to get one of these guys that we had targeted higher than Collier, we better at least get out of here with Collier, because if not, we may not end up getting a shot at getting one of these guys. Because I think that was the offseason where they had traded Frank Clark, and I think they traded away Michael Bennett, too, in that offseason. So they were left with hardly any pass rush options, but clearly Collier was just not that guy.
This wasn't ready to go, so now he goes over to Arizona. It looks like he will be backing up Jonathan Ledbetter. So he's not going to be asked to be the starter, but maybe he gets back into a 4-3 defense, and he finds his mojo again. He gets coached up by a different coach. And it's not to say that the coaches didn't get it done in Seattle, but sometimes it takes a different voice. You know, sometimes I stop coaching my son. Like, I haven't coached him in the past year or two because I'm like, look, I've been coaching you for so long. You hear the same voice. Experience somebody else. Maybe someone else can tap into something, and then I'm still here if you need me. So I look at LJ and I go, maybe he's back in the 4-3. He has a different voice in his ear. You might be able to tap into something, because we don't wish bad on nobody, man. All right, last guy, Rashad Penny. Now, this is the more baffling one, because there's no doubt the talent this dude has. The end of last year, goes on a run. In the last, what, 6-7 games, he is the best running back in the league. And then you start off 2022, bam, he's on the move again. And we're just crossing our fingers like, this, please don't
stay
get
healthy,
banged up.
Stay healthy.
And that's exactly what happened. So if there's a knock on Rashad, we all know what the knock is. He just hasn't been healthy. But the plus side is, when healthy, this dude can play.
He can. But I wonder if that health was just the reason the Seahawks didn't make him an offer that Topwood Philly had given him. Because I think if the Seahawks had given him an offer that was better than what the Eagles had given him, he probably stays in Seattle because he's talked very highly of the Seahawks. He's talked very highly of how they stuck by him a lot during his injury-riddled seasons and how, you know, he's very thankful that the opportunities that they gave him. I wonder, though, what Penny's role looks like in Philly if they go running back mm-hmm. with one of their first-round picks. Bijan Robinson of Texas has visited Philly. He visited them earlier this week. He's the number one running back on the board. If you take Bijan Robinson in the first round, you're committing to him as your starting running back, I think. And I think that would take away some carries for Penny, some opportunities. They've also got Boston Scott still in Philly, who's a capable backup. So I don't know if Penny's going to get the biggest share of carries in Philadelphia, but he's going to be running behind an offensive line that is better than any offensive yes. line he's ran behind. Of these guys, and I think Travis Homer's another guy that has left
the Bears.
In free agency going to the Bears, mm-hmm. I don't see him becoming a starting running back in Chicago. I think that's more of a special teams addition. I think that's more of a guy who can help you out in spurts at the running back spot. But Penny is the one guy of these four that I think has the ability to pop. I just don't see it happening. I just don't see him being able to get past those injury concerns, those injuries that have popped up throughout his career. I think it's fair to call him injury prone. I don't think he's gone through an entire season without spending some time on the injured list.
Nope, he needs a 1-2 combo over there. With Philly, he needs a back that's going to help him out. I expect these guys to draft a running back. All right, those were our guys. Man, we got Barton with the Commanders, LJ with the Cardinals, Penny with the Eagles, and then we throw in Travis Homer. He's over there with the Bears. When we return, man, Pete and John were in Columbus yesterday. They're in Bama today. They're at the Pro Day. Who are they watching? We'll let you know that's coming up next on the Bump and Stacey Show.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Rost.
Pete Carroll and John Schneider were in Columbus yesterday, and then they hop on that private jet plane, I assume. They don't fly commercial. Something tells me they do not fly commercial, and now they're down.
How many flights do you think there are from Columbus to Tuscaloosa daily?
Probably two.
Yeah, one in and one out. Yeah.
Exactly. You got to time it up. My buddy, side note, my buddy lives in Dallas, in Houston, and I told him I might be going to Dallas in a few months. He goes, yeah, man, they have like a flight every hour between the two cities.
Wow.
Which is nuts. Travel's crazy. But yeah. Pete and John are in Alabama. Now, there are some prospects that they are going to be looking at, but there's one that we know for sure ain't going to be there, and that is Bryce Young. Bryce Young is yeah. going to throw today. He did not. He didn't throw at the combine, but he did weigh in at 204. All right, something tells me Curtis Rogers, he's not going to be 204 at this pro day.
Well, what's interesting is that he did not weigh in at Alabama's pro day today. Mm. He's going to take his combine weight, and that's going to be his official weight.
That's what I weigh.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take my weight
a little slimmer
from 2 years ago. Yeah. I'm going to take that weight and say that's what I weigh now. So they're going to see Bryce Young throw, and you got to look at him, right? If something crazy happens yeah. and he drops to 5, you put in your work, you're looking at this young man and see how he carries himself. I think that's a big part of this pro day stuff is how does he carry himself? How does he communicate with people? Is he in control of the situation? There's another guy they're looking at that possibly could drop to number 5. We're not expecting it. Is Will Anderson. You got to size him up. You know what I do with big dudes? I think I told you before. If I see a big human being walking down the street.
What sport you play?
What you play, man? Right? And then if we dap it up, I'll pull him in tight so I can kind of feel him like, all right, man, how strong are you?
There was a New York Times article the other day that said tall people hate being asked if they play basketball.
Really?
And I was like, man, Bump would just see this article and throw it in the trash.
See, I don't ask basketball. I just ask what? Like, what is it?
There you go.
I'm going to say golf next time. Well, what's your handicap? So we got Will Anderson. They have to take a look at him. There's a possibility he drops to 5, but we're not expecting that. I think the Arizona Cardinals are probably going to take him with that number 3 spot. The last time the Cardinals picked number 3, who'd they take, Curtis?
That was a guy named Larry Fitzgerald who carved out a nice little career for himself.
Right. So I think they're hoping they can do that again with Will Anderson.
Yeah. But I mean, if you take Bryce Young and possibly Will Anderson out of the equation for the Seahawks, then why are they in? Why are they in Tuscaloosa today? Now, obviously, you've got to scout everybody because, like you said, you've got to prepare for randomness in the draft. There are going to be guys that go up. There are going to be guys that go down on draft night. It happens every single year. There's reaches. There's guys that fall. Who knows? Maybe Will Anderson or Bryce Young are those guys this year. I don't think they are. I think they are two of the most sure things in this draft. But there are about four other guys we pinpoint. And there's another reason why I think the Seahawks are going to be watching very intently at Alabama today that we're going to get to. But looking at these prospects, you've got safety Brian Branch, who has been mocked to them, I think, once prior. I think it was Todd McShay who had the Seahawks going for Brian Branch.
That ain't going
to happen. I don't think so anymore because he's a safety, and they just signed Julian Love. Mm-hmm. You've got Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs already there. Ryan Neal will probably be back. I don't see Brian Branch heading to Seattle. Now, there are three other positions of need that the Seahawks have that Alabama has dudes at performing at the Pro Day. Running back, Jahmyr Gibbs.
I don't see that neither.
I don't see it either because I think Gibbs is going to be a second or third round selection, and I think the Seahawks have bigger needs right now elsewhere on their roster that early on in the draft. Mm-hmm. I think they address that position later on. Defensive tackle Byron Young.
Possibly.
And then linebacker Henry To'o.
That's more like it. Now, I broke down, I think it was two or three weeks ago, I broke down film of this young man. And the thing that popped to me the most, okay, he will diagnose a play so quickly, it's ridiculous. That tells me he's a smart linebacker. He knows what he's looking at. Also, he is violent at the point of attack. He's not just trying to tackle you. He's trying to hurt you. That's the way you play that position. His east-to-west movement is crazy. And the most important thing, not the most important thing, but this organization needs it, he sniffs out screens. He sniffs it out. He gets east and west so fast. He wraps you up. He takes you down. Hawks need to do better at running screens and defending screens. Henry To'o. All right, we'll go with that. Is out of these prospects, the one that I see with the biggest chance of ending up in Seattle.
Interesting. Now, how much does Carl Scott's presence on the Seahawks defensive staff factor into the level of interest they have in some of these prospects? Because if you recall, Carl Scott came from Alabama mm-hmm. just a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. You know how this sport works. It's all about connections.
It's all about
who you know, right? And Carl Scott, I'm sure, is still connected to that Alabama staff over there. He's getting inside information on all of these players. They are selling him to the Seahawks, selling these guys to the Seahawks, especially with the number 5, number 20, and 38 or something like that? 37. All right. Communication is key, and they have been communicating. So with Carl Scott being on the staff, I think it's possible that the Hawks could end up with one of these. But you know how the draft goes, man. Things are going to happen in front of you. You have no control on what happens and picks in front of you. Some of these guys might be gone, or they might be available at a spot that the Hawks aren't comfortable drafting them at, and they go elsewhere. But the fact that you have an insider, Carl Scott, on staff means that you're taking a strong look at these dudes.
Yeah, I don't know if Carl Scott was photographed at yesterday's Pro Day at Ohio State. You had the selfie that C.J. Stroud took. You saw Pete. You saw Shane Waldron. Greg Olsen, the new quarterback's coach, was in that shot. There were a couple other familiar faces in that. But I didn't see Carl Scott anywhere at Ohio State's Pro Day. I would imagine he was on the first flight from Seattle to Tuscaloosa yesterday in order to meet the coaching staff there at Alabama.
Yeah, he was already on the plane.
Yeah, in the air.
I'll meet you guys in Bama.
Yeah, maybe he got there a couple days before. He knows his way around town, right? in Alabama. But you look at a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs. Let's talk about him for a little bit here. He may not be what the Seahawks want in the second or third round, but he's a running back from Alabama, and there is kind of a stigma in the NFL about the wear and tear that these guys from the Crimson Tide take at the collegiate level prior to getting to the NFL. Do you think that is fair, that Alabama running backs maybe get knocked a little bit because of how much they're used in college?
They're used a lot because you look at the quarterbacks, except as of late, right? You got Tua coming out. You got Jalen Hurts coming out. But before then, you have decent quarterbacks at Alabama, but none that really flourish, right? So what do? You hand the football off and you run that thing. Richardson screwed it up for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, he it might be the biggest bust in NFL history, him and another guy, but I'm not going to say that.
We hardly ever see running backs go top five anymore.
No, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
We're not going to see it anymore. And he contributed to that. But Ingram has had a decent career, a long career, and then Derrick Henry is probably
a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, for sure. But no, I think it's fair. I think it's fair, man. They wear those running backs down. Alabama is now wide receiver U with Ohio State. They put out some wide receivers.
Some
all right, they're down in Tuscaloosa, man. Let's see what information they bring back. Hey, you can listen to us anytime and check back for the rest of the show. If you miss anything, subscribe to the Bump and Stacey podcast. We're on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, and please rate and review if you do subscribe. All right, the Buckeyes had some of their best talent on display at their pro day yesterday. Coaches and GMs arrived in Columbus to watch a possible number one pick go to work. What did they learn from this visit?
Rabinowitz
of the Columbus Dispatch will fill us in next on the Bump and Stacey show.